Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
And we're back. Thank you for joining us today, ladies and gentlemen. Have a good program lined up for you. And we're going to dig into a kind of a specific area, but it really goes into this overall category of arranging your financial affairs and also your estate planning. If you have the opportunity to meet with me, you know that I will talk to you about a lot of things, including estate planning. Wills and trusts and things like that are very important. And I just met with a woman that came in to meet with me, and we just talked about her situation. I said, sounds like you need a trust, and she just had a will. So you know what? It's always good to be thinking about these things. And if it's old, the trust is old, the will is old, is it still relevant? Think about that, whether it's still appropriate for your situation. So we're going to get into a specific area on today's program that I'm very excited about, because I think this touches more people than they realize. And it's the subject of doing some estate planning for your pets. Don't laugh. It's important, okay? And it is so important that we've reached out to one of the premier organizations that focuses on the care and the benefit and the proper treatment of animals, the American Society of Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, ASPCA, and we're very fortunate to have Kim Brissant-Kibwe on the line. And she's going to be talking with us about these very important areas of doing the trusts and wills and things like that. She's in their Trust and Estates Council. And the website, if you want more information, a lot of great information over there, aspca.org. And you can find out more information and follow up on some of the things we're going to be talking about. Kim's responsible for the administration of all the charitable gifts directed to the ASPCA from national as well as international donors via their wills, trusts, and other estate planning documents. And she advises many donors about the ways they can make gifts to the ASPCA. But she also assists what they call pet parents in making proper plans and arrangements for the care of their pets should the unforeseen event occur, or even expectations about your departure from this planet. Who's going to take care of your pet and how will they be provided for? So she's got 16 years with the ASPCA. Kim, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you so much for having me here, and it's a topic that, I mean, I don't think I get enough time, airtime to talk about. And as you say, pet planning, people think of it and they say, well, pet planning. Well, I think part of the reason is we don't think of our pets as property, and under the laws of most states, pets are considered property. And
okay.
So unless an attorney is astute enough to bring this up and to make the link and to say, well, all forms of assets need to be considered in terms of your planning. People don't think of pets as property, and so I think that's where it falls really below the radar there. So when you consider two out of three American families have one or more pets, I think it's real important for us to sit down as responsible pet parents and make sure our pets enjoy an uninterrupted lifestyle if something should happen to one of us.
So well put, Kim. It's something I think that, as you put very well, that it's an afterthought. And if you haven't included it in your wills or your trust or your other estate planning documents, then kind of falls under the category of just being another personal property item that just gets, you know, unless somebody's dealt with it specifically, the executor, I suppose, of your will would be the one to decide where it goes if it hasn't been otherwise designated.
That's correct. Yeah. Or your administrator if you don't have a will. That is correct.
So,
and what an important decision to leave in the hands of someone who may not know the specifics of the situation. They may not even know your pet. So.
Well, they might give you. I mean, let me give you a crazy example. They might give your cat to your brother who hates animals. And I mean, it could be anything bizarre like that. Or
correct.
You know, I mean, so you've got to make a provision. And I got to tell you, I wanted to share this with you, Kim, and I know you have thousands of stories, but I just had a couple come in, and they are in good financial position, and they have a dog that they were sharing with me how they had spent some money on it. I think it was something like $1,500 or $1,800 getting the dog surgery, and it was a vertebrae or something going on. And to them, that dog is almost a child.
That's correct.
And so
our pets are our family. And so just to kind of begin the discussion, I think a lot of people are wondering, well, where do I begin? Because it can be daunting when you start thinking about even planning for one animal or pet, much less planning for a multiple pet household. But I strongly suggest that people start with the basics. It's what I call carry a pet alert card in your wallet. And I'm sure you saw this on our website. It's very simple. I mean, you can devise one for yourself, but the main thing is to put down the name of an emergency caregiver and their contact number, and then, of course, the name of, let them know that you have pets inside, and then, of course, your name and address, and preferably the name of your pet and the type of animal you have. How important is this for people to know, especially if you end up, unfortunately, in a hospital or some situation where you cannot speak for yourself? Perhaps you're unconscious, but emergency personnel will go through your wallet. They will find this pet alert card, which you can make up of your own, or you can have, we would be happy to send you one. But the point is, it's got this very valuable information that lets emergency personnel know that what, there's pets at your home, and somebody needs to be contacted, your emergency person, to go there and see about them. So to me, everybody can do that. I mean, if once we get off the phone, you should have all your listeners should be right there making those pet alert cards and putting them in their wallet.
Amen to that. Amen to that, Kim, because you're just right. They're focused on you, but there might be an animal. I mean, I want to put this too bluntly, but there might be an animal starving to death back at your house.
That's correct. That's correct.
That's very, very good advice. And, you know, to dig into this a little deeper, I want to get to, you know, some of the options that people have, say, some of the more informal options versus formal. Let's grab a break and we'll do that. Kim Brissant Kiebwe is our guest today, ladies and gentlemen. She is in their trust and estate council for the ASPCA, that's the American Society of Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, ASPCA.org. That break, and we're back with Kim. Stay right there.
Hello, this is Brenda Campbell, General Manager with Volusia Memorial Park and Funeral Home. We are committed to helping you with compassionate, professional, and personal service. When it comes to pre-planning for yourself or someone you love, a Digny Memorial Provider is the name you can trust for all your funeral, cremation, cemetery, and memorial service needs. Recording them and sharing them with your loved ones will help ensure your final arrangements will be what you want, easing the burden on your family and friends. We can be reached at 386-673-5373 or our website, VolusiaMemorialFunerals.com. Volusia Memorial Funeral Home in Port Orange and Ormond Beach. Life well celebrated.
Hey, we're back, and I'm very glad to welcome back Kim Brissant Kiebwe, our guest today, Trust and Estate Counsel for the ASPCA, ASPCA.org, and we're talking through making provisions for your pet. So there's a couple of options here, Kim, of course, that, you know, hey, I've talked to my neighbor, something happens to me, they'll take my cat.
And that's pretty pretty common. That falls under the category of what we call informal arrangements.
Okay.
So generally, informal arrangements would not involve the need of an attorney, okay? But then again, these are not what you would call legally enforceable arrangements. These are clearly arrangements that a person might make with a neighbor, mm-hmm. or maybe their veterinarian or a relative, and very often they're oral arrangements, sometimes written. These all okay? There's nothing wrong with having an informal arrangement, but I think there's important things people need to keep in mind. You can't assume that the person that you've selected as a caregiver is going to want your pet. This is kind of basic. It's like, do they love your pet? If they do, they're a good candidate. So let's not assume that your brother, your sister, your neighbor, your vet, or your cat sitter, or your dog walker are automatically going to be in a position to assume that responsibility.
Good point.
I think it's very important to have this conversation in advance and to secure the acceptance, if you will, or the consent of the person who's going to become that caregiver. And then don't stop there. Make sure you have a second or third person in tow, because you never know what's going to happen. We don't know when this situation would arise, if at all, and we want to make sure that should a situation arise where your pet needs care, if the first person that you selected is not available to help, you want to have a backup. I always say have a plan B, and if possible, have a plan C.
Yeah, I think that would be a good idea. And, you know, it occurs to me that if you do have this informal arrangement and you leave the pet, you know, as property to that person, or they've agreed to take them, then what if that animal has expenses and other things that, you know, that you know, the cat, maybe the cat has a history of some medical issues, or it develops them completely after you have passed on. These are completely new symptoms. You know, should somebody think about making some sort of at least a modest provision in their estate planning to leave some, basically some cash to somebody who's going to take care of their pet?
I always think that's a good idea. I mean, we have a section on the website talking about funding, what we call funding do's and don'ts. Mm. And I do think it's important for an individual to consider their pet's age. I mean, even at this point, if you have an elderly pet, then you know at some point the pet is going to probably have higher than normal medical bills. So these are things that you want to keep in mind as you make these arrangements for the care of your pet. And I think a donation or a little, a little side fund
for the
care of the pet is not a bad idea. And it could be done in a variety of ways. You could set aside a bank account, maybe a life insurance policy. You can name that potential caregiver or trustee or, for lack of person, the person who's going to manage the funds.
Right.
On behalf of your pet. There's all types of ways of leaving a little bit of money just to ease the pocketbook, so to speak, of the future caregiver. And if you're thinking of perhaps someone like a senior person, I always like people to think of seniors, because seniors are the ones who love the pets, but very often are not in a financial position to manage their care, the cost of care. But, I mean, seniors love pets, but, of course, the problem sometimes is restricted budget. So there's another reason why you would want to give a little bit money, you know, for the care of your pet, because then that opens up the possibilities in terms of a new home for your pet.
Absolutely. Well, I've got to ask a question, because this is something I've had somebody actually ask me, Kim, and this may sound strange and it may sound cruel, but I'm sure it's something you've dealt with. What about when the animal has had this history of medical problems or whatever the case may be, and the owner, you know, wants that if something happens to them, they want the animal to be put down?
Right.
Do you hear that kind of thing?
Yes, we do. We actually do. And I think that's really an individual decision. Because part of the whole exercise of putting together or making arrangements for the care of your pet is setting up what we call a pet dossier.
Yeah.
Now, in that, what you're going to be doing is talking about all of the habits and cares, habits and needs of your pet, including what medical problems that the pet may or may not have. So the point here is, I think, again, it's up to the individual to make a determination as to the severity of the illness. Some illnesses can be taken care of just with medication.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's why sometimes the idea of leaving a direction to euthanize your pet, I think, should be at the direction of a veterinarian. In other words, let a veterinarian make that final decision.
Okay.
If, in fact, the pet's best life would be to be humanely euthanized, that's one thing.
Okay.
But if a pet can have a normal life with manageable care, with manageable medication, then why shouldn't they, you know?
Right.
I don't think that's a decision that an individual should make without some advice from a veterinarian who sees the pet at that point in time.
Yes, very
good. That would be my suggestion.
Okay, no, that's very good, Kim. Thank you for that. Because I was curious about it, because I was asked about it, and I thought, well, I'll ask you. So let's get into the more formal arrangements if we can. So
Certainly. There
can be a provision in somebody's will for the pet?
Yes, and you know, it's interesting. When I first started out on this subject, I thought that actually wasn't a bad idea until I realized how many will contests happen throughout the country. And simply stated, a will contest is when one beneficiary comes in, doesn't like the will, and is going to prohibit that will from being validated in court. Well, if you've got a provision for an animal that's in that will that needs to be validated so that the executor can follow the instructions in the will, then that leaves your pet in a pretty precarious situation, because now no one has the authority to, quote, dispose of this pet, whether that means finding a home or putting it up for adoption or whatever the case may be. So I find that the will instruments are kind of the last place where you would want to put instructions for the care of a pet.
Okay.
I think as far as formal arrangements are concerned, one consider a pet trust.
Okay, you like the trust better.
Pet trusts are now valid in all 50 states with the exception of Minnesota. It's also valid in the District of Columbia. And this is a legally sanctioned document that basically allows a pet owner to make a determination as to who the caregiver will be, who the trustee will be, who the class of beneficiaries, meaning the pets who will be covered by the pet trust. And you can get into the very specifics of the kind of care that you want your pet to have in a pet trust. Now, normally I recommend that you have an attorney draft them because they are legally sanctioned laws that an attorney would be able to handle all of those little what-if scenarios, and they won't be leaving anything out. For example, what's to happen with money if there's money left over, if you happen to leave money in a pet trust for the care of a pet, and you don't have to, but if you should, what happens to the remainder if it's not used up? You have to consider how to dispose of the pet. Is it going to be via a burial through a cremation? And you have to make sure that the lifestyle that is dictated in the trust agreement coordinates well with the amount of money that you're leaving in trust. You don't want to leave too much, because that's a mark for beneficiaries to come in and challenge your arrangements. So there's a lot of little things with respect to a pet trust that I think a person would benefit from talking to an attorney. Certainly, pet trusts are great for animals who have longer lifestyles.
Okay.
Your primates, your horses, your aviaries, your birds, your parrots that live 75 and 80 years. So pet trusts make a lot of sense for people who have multiple pet households and multiple species households. I mean, they've got the cats, the dogs, they've got the horses. They might even have a few rabbits and who knows what else thrown in the mix. So certainly in that case, a pet trust would make sense.
Well, I can see all the advantages. I'm hearing you say, Kim, that the trust really should be separate. I mean, it's not something maybe necessarily that would go into as part of the other trust because of some of the maybe inherent conflicts.
I agree, and I thoroughly agree. I think anything dealing with your animal should be a set-aside or a standalone agreement. And why? Because chances are you're going to make more changes to your estate planning documents than you will to this. This has been my experience. And so, you know, and then sometimes it's vice versa. People change, the animals pass away, they add animals to the household. So you don't want to get involved with changing up your formal will and trust documents that deal with your hard assets, your house and your financial assets, when all you want to really deal with are your pets. So I heartily recommend that people keep these documents separate. Make sure that your pet trust agreement or pet protection, and I'll tell you what that is in a minute, are standalone documents so that they can easily be changed without having to disrupt any of the other estate planning arrangements that you've made for your other assets.
I
mentioned pet protection agreement, and that's an interesting, arrangement which was developed by a friend of mine, we call her the pet trust lawyer. Her name is Rachel Hirschfeld. And basically, the pet protection agreement is a contract. And it's a contract. It's available, I think, through LegalZoom.com. It's very inexpensive, very reasonable, I should say. And basically, what it does, it sets about all the information that a pet parent would need. It gives you an opportunity to name your caregiver as well as successive caregivers. It gives you an opportunity to name the person who's going to dole out the money. I like to call them trust protectors for short. It's not really the caregiver, but it's an independent third party who's going to dole out the money and see to the well-being of your pet. It's like a system of checks and balances. Also, the pet protection agreement allows you to provide details about your pet's care, and all of the things that we want people to put in their pet dossier, you can just transpose it and put it in there. The beautiful thing about the pet protection agreement is that it's a contract, and it basically asks the caregiver to sign on and to accept their role as a caregiver. Now, certainly down the road, a person could always say, no, I'm not in a position to do this, and this is why you want to have a successor or a backup. But I like the pet protection agreement because it's what we call, it's portable. You can go from state to state to state to state. It doesn't matter. You don't have to worry about its validity because it is a contract. But I think it's every set forth everything that you need in one document, and it even does give you an opportunity to leave money. It tells you where the money's been left, you know, mm-hmm. what account for who, blah, 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 blah.
Right. Well, that's very good. That's excellent. Well, I got to grab another break, Kim. We'll come back and we'll talk some more about some of these particulars, but it's very helpful. Kim Brissant Kiebwe, ladies and gentlemen, Trust and Estate Counsel for the American Society for Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. Quick break. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Teresa Rand with the Volusia Flagler YMCA. Our Y has 6 locations to help you reach your health and fitness goals. With a focus on healthy living, youth development, and social responsibility, there are many different options to get your family involved, such as sports, swim, exercise, and much more. For more information on how your Y can help with your health and fitness goals, check out www.vfymca.org.
Do you have financial questions you'd like answered on this show? Send them to questions@planstronger.com. You will remain anonymous.
And we're back.
Okay.
All right. Kim Brissant Kiebwe on the line there, and happy to have her with us, and from the ASPCA. And it's ASPCA.org. A lot more information there and guidance. And, you know, I was thinking on the break, Kim, that you made a great point, and I think people often overlook the fact that that some animals do live a long time. And, you know, if you happen to have for example, a Galapagos tortoise that lives 177 years, you know, you might need to plan for that.
That's correct. Absolutely. And while we're on the subject, you know, it's interesting. I didn't mention this before, but there are such things as animal retirement homes. They're not frequent. You know, there aren't a lot of them, but they're usually attached to veterinary schools and
right.
things of this nature. So, I mean, they are out there. We have a listing of a few. But if a person decides to do a retirement home for their pet, I think the main thing is just to check them out and, you know, do your due diligence. Make sure that you have maybe a referral, or if you've had an opportunity to
yeah.
visit, that may be what you might want to do. You want to investigate their reputation and their care and that sort of thing. But there are animal retirement homes out there for a variety of animals.
Cats, how about
birds,
that?
And especially when you're talking exotics and
yeah.
unusual animals, retirement homes may be your only option.
How about that? Well, listen, we got to make sure that Mr. Fluffy maintains the lifestyle to which he has become accustomed.
Absolutely.
Well, I wanted to ask a couple of quick questions, if I could, Kim, on the point of not every attorney, of course, is going to be as familiar with the intricacies of creating a pet trust. So this is something where if somebody's interested, they can, go to your website for resources, and or they can ask a estate planning attorney if it's something that they can do.
Yeah, I heartily recommend that people seek out attorneys either through a reference, because this isn't an area where there is a lot of experience. I'll just be quite frank.
Sure.
But I think what you'll find is attorneys who have animals tend to be a lot more sensitive to the subject.
Yeah.
So I think just in terms of one's common sense, seek out attorneys who have animals. Maybe ask them what they've done. It might be surprised that they've done nothing yet, but maybe they have.
Okay.
And then, of course, go on referrals. Just ask those questions. Ask
yeah.
those hard questions.
Well,
you know, if they don't have an animal now, have they ever had an animal? Did they
right.
grow up with animals? I think there's a different sensitivity with
sure.
people who have animals in their household. They ask those questions that need to be asked.
Yeah. Well, you know, on that point, you need to have the selection of a trustee. And I'm more sensitive to that because I do trustee work, and I'm a certified trust financial advisor. So I do trust work and serve as trustee for my clients. I haven't been asked yet to be the trustee of a pet trust, but I think it's a natural extension and part of what I'm already doing. So it's something I'm very glad that we've been able to get acquainted with today, Kim, because I'd like to explore this as an area where we can offer that and help our clients.
Oh, that would be wonderful. And I believe me, they'd be coming to you in leaps and bounds, because it's just not something that's talked about. And I think what's interesting, too, is a lot of people don't understand the process.
Hmm.
A lot of attorneys I've seen, they for lack of knowledge, they just don't know. They don't explore the topic with their clients, and I think they need to, because there's so much that can be done up front in terms of the planning stage, so that when an event does happen, people aren't scrambling. Then folks aren't calling me at the last minute, they're going to take the pet to the shelter, or they're going to euthanize the pet, or whatever the case may be. I think the other thing that people need to do, and this is for people who don't have a lot of relatives and friends. We have a lot of loners out there, people who live with their pets. Mm. So my suggestion to them is you want to reach out to a rescue group, to an animal humane organization that's in your area. You want to befriend them, because the whole idea here is they may be able to provide temporary care, if not assistance in rehoming your pet if something were to happen. You know, we want to be friends up front. We don't want to wait for something to happen and then we have to scramble. I think it's real important for people to reach out to their local rescue groups and humane organizations. A lot of them are doing a fantastic job, and they are our first line of defense in terms of helping, even on a temporary basis. And this one last thing I want to say, I think people need to take pet planning in bits and pieces. So you may not know of someone who will take your pet on a permanent basis, but if you've identified someone who can take your pet even on a temporary basis, I'm talking a week, 2 weeks, a month, that's very important, because those first 24, 48 hours, that first week is critical in terms of the life of a pet. So even though a person has identified themselves and say, hey, look, I can't take care of your pet permanently, but I'd be glad to help in a fostering mm-hmm, situation,
sure.
But temporarily, boom, they raise up their hand, you got to take them. So you do it in steps, you see?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great way to approach it. And you know, you made a great point, Kim, and we're going to have to wrap up, that period right after you, either if you're in the hospital or if you have passed on, that's a real stressful time for the animal because they know something's going on.
That's
and you
right.
want to have that already in place. Well, I'm going to direct everybody to the website one more time, Kim. The website is ASPCA, American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. Our guest today has been Kim Brissant Kibwe, and I am just delighted she's been on the program. And Kim, we'll have to have you come back and give us another update and talk some more.
I would love to. And maybe you can entertain some questions and we can come back and chat about them.
That sounds great to me. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland? Or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.